there were complaints on both sides, like, we shouldn't have to, like, stop having fun, and they're going, yeah, but drunk guys are walking across the road, and they're standing mourning at one of our funerals. We don't know who they are. They're just drunk and joining in.
Probably peeing, too, right?
Yeah. So words were exchanged, things were negotiated, and what ended up happening, anybody want to guess what happened? They decided they weren't going to have funerals on Sundays anymore. So they kept having their little party over there, but they could not, in fact, do funerals anymore. Actually, John, he actually designed some Third Ward Phoenix building. So if you've been down in the Third Ward and seen that, he did the North, South, and Bascom Halls at UWM. And he also designed the Illinois and Iowa Capitol buildings.
Who's that?
John Ragu.
Okay.
His style really varied widely. He went from neoclassical to Federalist, which is what we have across the street, late Victorian. He even did some Egyptian revival. So he was all over the board. But he ultimately went back to Iowa to be buried in Dubuque. And that gives me a chance to talk a little bit about when you start a tour like this and you decide, oh, I'm going to do historical figures, the first thing you have to figure out is, are they dead? That's the first thing. Well, you make your list, and then you go, are they dead, and are they buried out here? So when I was doing this tour at the end of my first go-round, I had about 250 possible candidates. That got winnowed down very quickly because a lot of them are not buried here. And lest you think that history is history, I decided that I wanted to be a little more inclusive, so I tried to find the first black architect. He was in fact dead. He was not buried here, unfortunately. So I thought, well, that's okay. I'll find the second black architect. He's still alive. So history is just in your rearview mirror. It's like, it's sneaking up on you.
How old would he be?
I believe he's in his 80s.
Yeah.
What's his name? I knew you were going to ask me that. The first black architect was Alonzo Robinson. And for the life of me, I can't think of that.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't prepared for that question, so I
thought. No.
Now, as we walk over here, we'll kind of look back, and you'll be able to see that building a little bit better. And also, take a look at the office and the greenhouses behind it. The office space was designed by Alexander Eschweiler, who also designed, and if you're from Milwaukee and you've been around, this might look familiar to the Waldham Gas and Oil Company. Mm-hmm. They made them look like little Japanese pagodas. Mm-hmm. He designed those, okay? He also was he did some of the buildings downtown. He did the Milwaukee Gas and Light building. He did the Bell Telephone building. He was primarily known for doing all of those Upper East Side, like
Elizabethan revivals.
The mansions that you see for the newly wealthy here in Milwaukee up on the near north side. So he was known for that. The greenhouses were designed by Fitzhugh Scott. Now, some of Fitzhugh's family is buried here in the cemetery. He was not, and I could not figure out where he went to. So it's not unlikely that he's here, too. We just can't find him. That does happen occasionally. He studied under Eschweiler, so he was Eschweiler's student. He was a grim-looking guy. This is when he was in the military. And I'm sorry these are so small, but we were trying to print them out yesterday, and it was a little bit dicey. So he was a little bit grim-looking. But he did the very early version of the Children's Hospital, the Humphreys building that's on the Marquette campus. He designed that one. He also did East Castle Place, which is the senior living facility on the east side. Although there is an addition on there by Francis Hinton, we're going to see him later today because he's actually buried out here too. And he did the Allen Bradley building. Now his son and grandson followed him into the business, and one of them became a founding partner for Kaler Slater, the architectural firm here, and that is the oldest architectural firm in the city. So they have quite a history. Now we'll go over here and check out Carl Ringer. I like Carl Ringer. He's an interesting guy. He was the city architect for a while. He was also a city building inspector from 1911 to 1912. You'll notice that's a very short tenure for him. Part of that is because he was taking nothing from nobody. Ashes are here. There he is, right there. And he was actually part of a pioneer in the city's socialist movement as well. But he was known as the Dean of Milwaukee Architects. And when you take a look at him, you're thinking, what an unassuming looking guy. How would you imagine this guy being a mover and a shaker? He looks like Walter Milktoast, doesn't he? That's him. Anyway, but
yeah,
he was very well respected by other architects in the city, very much so. But he had a little bug sometimes. And while he was the city building inspector, the mayor at that time, Mayor Bader, came to him and said, I want you to tear down this building. And Carl said, there is nothing wrong with that building. I'm not tearing that building down. And so they got into it, and the mayor fired him. Well, he wasn't taking that, so he took that case all the way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He actually prevailed. He got his job back. He got all of his back wages, and he immediately quit. Because he had made his point. He didn't need to pursue it any further. He was born in Germany. He actually trained under George Mygad, who we're going to meet a little bit later in the cemetery. George was probably Milwaukee's first architect. And when I say he was the first architect, he could draw and he could build. There weren't any real requirements back then. There weren't any real credentials for being an architect. But he went on to train some of Milwaukee's better-known architects as well. He was, we'll talk about him later. But so Carl actually designed the Zion Evangelical Church on North Avenue, the Gennaro Warehouses. He did a theater in the Third Ward. His sister Bertha married a guy named Carl Benz, who helped develop the Mercedes-Benz. And he is here in Chapel Gardens. This garden was actually designed by Chicago architects named Gruntner and Zeroli. And they, I know, there are some of those around. I'll tell you a cool story when we get to the Newhall Fire Monument that's kind of interesting in that way, too. Well, next up, we get to hide underneath the chapel, so we're good. This isn't too bad.
The buildings all really merged together pretty nicely. This was built many, many years before the chapel was built, so they kind of took that into account when they designed it. When we get to see some of the other stones on the tour, we'll talk a little bit about how you find graves in the cemetery. It's quite a little adventure, I'll say that. Use those because of COVID. I hated them, but now I've fallen completely in love with them. I should take a picture of one and bring it to Sarah and tell her we need to get them. Now, one of the things about the cemetery, especially when you're developing a tour, is you have to take into account that it's huge and there's a lot of walking. So when I started doing this tour and I was narrowing down the names and deciding what I wanted to do, I had us ranging all over the place. It probably would have been a 3-hour tour just for walking. So we're not going to see every architect that's buried here. If there's somebody you're interested in, you can ask me if we don't see him, and I probably will be able to tell you a little something about him. My son's an architect, so that's kind of how I got into doing this. So this is the chapel. It was designed by George Bowman Ferry and Alfred Kloss. This is George. Again, tiny picture. Sorry about that. That's George, and he's actually sitting in their big drafting room that they had. There were about 8 or 10 other people in this room. And then this is Alfred. He's a very distinguished-looking gentleman.
How else do you take a photo? It must be distinguished.
You have to be distinguished, for sure. So, actually, the chapel was considered as early as 1851. It was not... they just considered it. It was on someone's back burner. They seriously considered it in 1889, and they put out a call to several well-known Milwaukee architects and said, give us your plans. You have a $20,000 budget. Let's see what you got. So Edward Townsend Mix was their favorite selection. Unfortunately, he went over the $20,000 budget, so they said, well, let's put it back on the back burner. They gave everybody $100, thanked them for their trouble, and nothing happened for a little while. Then the following year, now remember, their money was in 1890, Ferry and Kloss came in and said, look, we'll build your chapel. It'll cost you $35,000. So they went with it, and they decided to go with that. I don't know why. And they had their grand opening in 1892. Now, Edward Townsend Mix, who was the first guy that didn't get the contract, was a Wisconsin State architect from 1864 to 1867. He helped design the National Soldiers Home, the Mitchell and the Mackey buildings downtown, St. Paul's Episcopal Church. During the Gilded Age, he was kind of the go-to architect in Milwaukee because he was doing all the little frou-frous and the towers and the turrets and the things that, at that time, the Germans with money wanted to have
memories of their homeland. So they were going with German castle look, and there were a lot of those around. And he really worked with them on that. He actually was so good at that particular kind of style that when things started to shift and people wanted things more pared down and more streamlined, he really couldn't get with the program. So he ended up losing a lot of commissions. He moved back to Minneapolis, and he died there. Ferry and Kloss did the Central Library downtown, the Pabst Mansion, and the Tripoli Shrine, along with many, many others. But those were probably their well-known ones.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Pardon. Did you say that he did the Soldiers' Home? Which one did he do? The one over here in the woods?
The original one? I'm not from Milwaukee.
He did the old main building at Wood Cemetery.
Okay, so thank you. Woods, the old main. All right, I work over there.
Do you?
That's why I'm asking.
Cool, now I know something. I like it when people share extra information with me. Now, back behind this, in the basement, is the crematorium. The crematorium in Milwaukee has a fascinating history. In 1885, the Turner Society and the Progressive Germans got together and said, we need to have a crematorium. So they got the ball rolling, and they decided, we're going to do this fundraising, we're going to get people interested in it, we're going to do all of that. By 1887, that had lost steam. The fundraising had been very lackluster. Nothing was really going on. But it was becoming a thing that people were really talking about. It had become a very big way to be interred on the East Coast. So it's picking up steam on the East Coast, nothing over here. By 1894, I love this part. I actually had them print out the newspaper article, but it didn't make it into my pile. It's probably sitting in there somewhere. In 1894, they put an application in the paper, and they said, this is an application for incineration. We would like to judge your interest about whether or not you think we should get a crematorium, and it was to raise money. So you sent your $25 in, you said, I'm very interested, and your $25 was good for, as they said, one incineration. They weren't sugarcoating anything back there. You were getting incinerated. At that time, there were 17 crematories in the country, and they had cremated over 2,700 bodies by that time. In 1895, the cemetery, judging that they had gotten a fair amount of response, I believe they got $1,000 out of that whole premise, and they said, okay, well, this is interesting. So they took a junket to the East Coast to look at the crematorium that had been out there, and they were so excited about it, they came back here and decided to build this one. So they contracted the Matthews brothers, who we're also going to meet a little bit later on. And in 1891, the Matthews brothers said, you know what, we can do it for $10,000. All right. By 1895, they were still thinking about it, but they came up with two plans. One of them was either a separate facility or one under the chapel. Well, obviously, they've gone with the one under the chapel. And in 1896, they had their first incineration.
Oh!
It was the only crematorium in the upper Midwest, and people literally traveled here from all over this area, like other states, Michigan, Minnesota, to come here to use it. Also underneath there with the crematory are the winter vaults, because way back in the day, when the cemetery first started, in the wintertime, you couldn't bury people. Obviously, the ground was too hard. They didn't have the right equipment for it. So what they would do is they would store your body. People at home did it in their root cellars. There were vaults here that they could be put under. This is not the first winter vault for the cemetery. There was one over in this section here that they had actually dug out into the ground. They took that out so that they could put people in there just in special, you know, regular burials. Then, at some point, they came up with the idea that if you put charcoal over the area that you wanted to dig into and let that burn and let it melt the dirt underneath overnight, then you could come in the next day and dig it out. So they started to do that. Captain Pabst actually spent some time in the winter vaults here, and his wife had hired the
Pinkerton.
Yes, they're thinking, I kept saying Pinkney, that's not right. The Pinkerton brothers to stand guard over that 24/7 until they could bury him, because she was afraid that relic seekers would come and desecrate the grave. So maybe not the worst idea anybody ever